There we go. And okay. Well, welcome everyone. This is Ruth Garath, and this is the Big Idea Call every Thursday at noon Eastern, always free, always will be. The reason that I do these calls is to give us a place, kind of an oasis in the week, to explore topics that get us to think bigger and in a way that helps us grow our businesses and improve our lives. And today, what we're going to be talking about are strategies for building positivity and productivity. And so let's just get right into that topic. I think first I should probably say a little bit about me, because I tend to forget to do that. I created something called the Consultants Business Academy, and it's to help consultants learn how to build their businesses, market themselves, and consult like the largest companies in the world do. But today I'm going to be talking about a topic from my book, From Hired to Happy, which is, a subject very near and dear to my heart. I wrote this book to help people thrive in their careers as well as in their lives. And one of the things that has become very apparent to me as a solopreneur and working with other small businesses is that one of the hardest things that we have to do is manage our minds and how we look at what's going on. Because being an entrepreneur isn't the easiest thing in the world. There are many very exciting days, and then there are days that are just kind of tough. So I'd like to talk about, hold on a second, I'm having a computer issue here. I'd like to talk about how we can use these tools to be able to be more positive even in the face of challenges that we have. So the first question when I present this, and I do speak on this topic, is people ask me, well, were you always happy? Were you one of those people that kind of just came out of the chute happy? And the answer is absolutely not. I wasn't. Depression runs in my family. And when I was in my 20s, I experienced it. And I had to learn tools to help me live the life that I wanted to lead. And that was fully engaged, productive, have a successful career, successful relationships, that sort of thing. So I've been kind of working on this for many, many years. And then I, about 4 years ago, started writing a book. Maybe it was three. I published it a year ago. And this is the result of all that I've learned. And I studied positive psychology at the University of Pennsylvania with one of the preeminent instructors in this area. So, no, I wasn't always happy, but I've learned that using techniques and learning some new skills have made a big difference. And here's one of the things. I'll be using some quotes throughout this talk because I find them so compelling. Robert Louis Stevenson wrote, "There is no duty so underrated as the duty of being happy. By being happy, we sow anonymous seeds upon the world." And I love that quote because it says that as we work to increase our level of happiness, and I'm going to describe what happiness means in a minute, we're actually not just helping ourselves, we're helping those around us, because happiness is contagious. The other thing is that the World Health Organization has done studies, and they indicate that by the year 2020, depression is projected to reach the second place of what are called dailies, lost work days. So in other words, it's going to be the second ranking problem for people to lose days of work. So it's becoming a very serious illness. And we need techniques, not just as entrepreneurs, but as people in general, for managing how we actually are in the world and how we increase our happiness. So what is happiness? There are three levels, and I'm going to go through these really quickly. And if you've heard me speak on this topic before, you know them, but here's a quick refresher. The first level, and this is, again, through through psychological studies. Positive psychology is the field of studying how people actually thrive even in difficult situations. So the three levels of happiness are hedonic, meaning hedonism. You get a little bump. When you buy a new car, for example, you can't wait to go to work even if you hate your job because the car smells so good. That's not a very long-lasting happiness, and we find that people need to kind of keep getting bumps. Go to the mall, buy something new, get a new relationship. The second level, and this is really a magical level that I'll talk about, and it's very helpful to us in our business is if we understand this, is engagement. That's when we're involved in something that we're both good at, but also that we really love doing. It's that sort of very special place where time goes by very quickly. It's called being in flow. And flow really is a technical term in the world of psychology, and it means that time is passing because you're so engrossed or engaged in what you're doing. The third level of happiness is meaning, and we hear a lot about that, and lots of it has been written about it, and it is a great level of happiness. It means when you're involved in something larger than yourself. The fact of the matter is that the second level of engagement, happiness, I believe, is underrated and underexplored, and it's the area that I want to talk about today, is how to find ways of staying in that level of engagement in our businesses and in our lives so that we're just naturally happier and are able to become more resilient. And resilience is the ability to bounce back from, you know, the tough things that happen in life. And when we have our own businesses, boy, there are some tough days, and we have to be able to bounce back. So happiness increases this resilience, and resilience increases your ability to handle whatever life brings your way. So let me just take a moment and talk about what psychologists found when they went and studied people who live in very, very challenging environments. Inner city kids who, you know, really bad areas, dangerous, but they thrive anyway. And they looked for the characteristics that these outlier individuals had. And this is what they discovered. These individuals who are able to thrive in a very difficult environment do these six things. They take responsibility for their lives. They are pragmatically optimistic. They believe life has meaning. They very importantly focus on their strengths, not their weaknesses. They find mentors, people who've walked the path before that can help them do the same. And they help others because they believe that in helping others, it comes back to them, tenfold. So these are natural characteristics that individuals who thrive in difficult circumstances simply have. And then the question becomes, can other people learn these? And the answer is, yes, they can, if they understand what they are. In addition, we know some interesting statistics about happiness. Again, a research, Sonia Lubomirsky has done a lot of research in this area, and it's been determined, she's determined that about 50% of our happiness is based on what's called a happiness set point. It's kind of like how you're built. It's how you look at the world, your DNA, not so much how you look at the world, that's wrong actually, but it's your DNA, it's just who you are. 10% has to do with your circumstances, but 40% of your lasting happiness and therefore your ability to be resilient in the world is something that we can each all control by learning certain skills. So, if I were doing a session after doing this piece, I would do a little breakout called, you can just write this down if you're writing anything down. Take a piece of paper on the left are these words. If I were happier, I would. And then on the right, the benefits to me and others would be. So if I were happier, I would do or be or say or feel this. And what would the benefits be to myself and others for that? And I'm not going to have you do that exercise now, but feel free to do it when you have your, you know, some moments to reflect. I call these take a minutes, and in the book From Hired to Happy, there are bunches of them. So now let's go back to talking about. We sort of set a little foundation for what is happiness. We have hedonic engagement, meaning. We can control up to 40%. Of our level of happiness and therefore our resilience by understanding some of these concepts and applying them. So But before we go on, I want to say something that I believe is really very important. You are not two people. None of us are. One person outside of work and another person inside of work. In the old days, particularly for people who came out of the corporate world like myself, it's kind of you put the suit on and you put on the suit personality and you went to work. And at home you were someone else. But we learned pretty quickly that that didn't really work. So the fact of the matter is that what you think, how you think, and ultimately how you behave, it all comes from the same source. And that source is our thoughts. As what our emotions are generated by our thoughts. So when we learn to be self-exploratory and look at our thoughts and determine what is that thought working for us, is it not working for us, and then we can learn to change those thoughts to things that work for us better. This is a very powerful way of increasing your level of happiness. So let me stop here and review this concept of flow, because I want to talk about two things. Both, I'm going to teach you a technique around how to work with your thoughts, but before I do that, I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about flow and engagement. So in our work, we all have to do things that we love and that we don't love. If you are getting up every morning and there's nothing that you love about your business, then you're in the wrong business. It's pure and simple. You can't make it work, because as an individual, as a solopreneur, as a small business person, it's all about you. It's all about your energy. So hopefully there are things that you really like doing and that you're really good at and that put you in flow. And it's really super important to know what those are. Because as you grow your business, you're going to be looking for either, you know, a virtual assistant or partners to do the things that you really don't like doing. And it's important before you get there to organize yourself to say, for example, there's some things I don't really love doing, and I have to figure out what's the best time in the day for me to do those so that I make sure I get them done, even though I don't like doing them. And one of the tricks I use is some of the things that I don't care for doing would be administrative things for my business, and I do those on Fridays. So Friday, that's the day that I have my list and I go through them. So understanding what you really love doing and what you're really good at and it puts you in flow, and what you really don't like doing, and organizing your time so that you can be doing the things that you don't like doing and still getting them done, but spending as much time as you can in flow will be very, very helpful for you in managing the ups and downs around your business. Now, the second thing about managing the ups and downs around business is a technique of self-inquiry, and it's called an equally true but different thought. Let me just explain what I mean. I'll give you an example. Let me tell you a story. So when I was writing this book, From Hired to Happy, I got to a point, I was about 3/4 of the way through it, and I had a day that I was just thinking, I am never going to get this thing done. What have I done? I've said I'm going to write this book. People know I'm working on it. I've conducted interviews. People have been giving me interviews that I can, you know, use as stories in the book, but I can't get this thing done. It's just not working. And I started to sort of spiral down into what I call a situational depression, meaning I was feeling pretty depressed in that moment. So then I thought, well, this isn't going to work because I can't get this done if I'm in this very down place. So I used a technique that I have been writing about called an equally true but different thought. And it goes like this. Ruth, what are you thinking? Okay, I'm thinking that I'm an idiot for getting myself involved in this book that I'm never going to finish, and I'm going to embarrass myself and all of this, and oh, blah, 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 you know, really beating myself up. And then I thought, okay, what's an equally true but different thought that would make me feel better? And I thought about it, and I realized, oh, yes, I've run many big, difficult projects over my career. And in the middle of most of them, there was always a period that was really, really tough where, you know, we just didn't know how we were going to get through the rest of it. You know, something would happen and it would be, you know, there'd be a crisis, and we always managed through it. I always manage the team through it. So I thought, whoa, if I've done that before and this is a project, I can do that again. Which totally lifted my spirit. And I thought, well, okay, so then I just decided to get out of the house and go for a walk. And I came back and I worked very productively for a couple of hours. And then, from then on, every time I hit that wall in my head, and if you've written a book, many people hit this wall, which is you just don't know how you're going to get it done. I would say, this is nothing more than a project. I've done these before. This is a tough spot. Take a break. Keep going. So the equally true but different thought is very powerful. The other thing that's very powerful is practicing gratitude. Now, a lot of people talk about this, but it is, for me, one of the most powerful ways of managing, you know, when I get really challenged with anything, really. And it's very simple, but there's a trick to it. Gratitude is just being grateful. Being grateful, and people will, you know, in the morning often I'll lie in bed and I'll think, what are five things I'm grateful for? And I think of them and I get up in a positive frame of mind. Some people write in their gratitude journal in the evening. The trick from the perspective of psychology is when you are writing about what you're grateful for is to try to envision that experience. Because it's tying the thought of being grateful to the emotion, the positive emotion that you experience in the gratitude and in that experience that you are grateful for, that reinforces practicing gratitude. It makes practicing gratitude come to life in a whole new way and build this concept of positivity. So practicing gratitude, using an equally true but different thought technique, really questioning yourself what you're thinking about and can you replace it with something that's equally true but different. These are, and looking and starting to understand when you get into flow and how you can organize your life so that you can get into flow more often are three very powerful techniques for increasing your positivity and ultimately keeping your level of productivity up because you will be more positive. I'm just going to run through a few more quickly and then I'll open it up for calls. Here are things that you've read about before, but I'm going to just rattle them off quickly. Take a break every 90 minutes. Research shows that basically after 90 minutes you go into this stale state. Get up, bounce around your office. I have some little weights that I use. Just take a break and then go back to your work. Aerobic exercise, and that means just a brisk walk, really, really good for handling any kind of stress and even depression. Declutter your office. Studies are being done on what clutter does to disorganize. Basically, physical clutter clutters the mind, and that makes it very hard to be organized in your work. And when you're not organized, you feel out of focus. Motivational pictures and quotes are really helpful in an office, but here's a trick. Change them around every few months because you start to not see them anymore. That's the fourth one. The fifth one, be helpful to other people. It's just a huge positivity booster. Listen to music that inspires you or makes you laugh. Watch movies that make you laugh. One of the things I think that happens with people, we become so serious. And if we can take a little bit of time out of each day and do things that sort of delight us, it's amazing how it lifts our level of positivity. So I've been talking for about 20 minutes on a topic that sometimes I talk for hours on. If you have a question, press star 2. Or and I'll see your hand raised. If you are on the web, you can simply put in your question, and I'll see your questions on the web. Let me look and see if there are any incoming and approved. See all questions. I don't see any yet. And by the way, I won't keep us if there are no questions. Oh, I've got a question from Jolene. Let me see, Jolene. There you are. Hi.
Hi. Well, you know, it's probably more of a comment than a question. When you started the conversation about understanding, I'll say, you know, the process or the steps to be happy. Well, actually what you said was, I'm going to define happiness. And I thought, finally, somebody's going to define it. And then when you explained, because I've always thought happiness was just simply, you know, you just had to grit your teeth and make a choice. And I really appreciate you breaking happiness down in so many different dimensions to helping me really look at it as part of, yeah, part of my DNA and my tendency, but then it is also part of practice, part of intention, and it's also, of course, what we all enjoy is the sharing. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Jolene. Yeah, it was such an eye-opener for me to study happiness. I mean, who thought, you know, and I like things to, you know, this is my desire, is to learn things from a research perspective so that I understand it both intellectually and emotionally, internally, you know. So that concept of hedonic engagement and meaning were just huge for me. And when we think about engagement, I had never heard it explained that way before, that it is this concept of being in flow, the thing when time goes by so fast because you're doing something that you're both good at and that you love doing. And, you know, for many of us, when we came through school, we were tested on what we were good at, but nobody really said, what do you love doing?
Right.
So it's a new way to think about it. So thanks, Jolene.
Thank you.
Okay, I have someone, anonymous, who has a question.
Oh, hi, Ruth. Can you hear me?
I can. Who's this?
Hi, this is Catrice. How are you?
Hi, Catrice. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I agree with the last caller. I just wanted to say thank you. I really appreciate this topic. It was great. And I have never heard happiness explained like that, but specifically engagement. And I have experienced the flow, which is why I can really connect to that definition. So thank you so much. And I do have one question.
Sure.
Can you talk more about some techniques to actually change your thoughts when you observe that you're having one that's not really that positive or not serving you well? What are some techniques that you can use to change it, and how can you, I guess, gauge your progress other than when your life starts to be more like what you want it to look like?
Very good, Catrice. Good question. Well, of course, I'm a big fan of the equally true but different thought. And let me tell you why. That works. This was a very powerful lesson. When I say equally true but different, it's important that if you're thinking something negative, first of all, it's to be aware of what it is. When you replace it with something that's equally true but different and will make you feel better, here's the thing. You'll all laugh at this. I'm tiny. I'm about 5 feet tall. So I can't tell myself, hey, listen, I'm 6 foot tall, because my brain isn't going to buy it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be true in order for it to work. So in the example I gave you, where I was really emotionally feeling bad, in the midst of working on this book, I had to find something that my brain would believe. Right? So here's a technique. Go through, just sit down and think about all the times that you've done something that's really worked, that you've been successful at, that you've really enjoyed doing. It could be a project that you've worked on, an article that you wrote, a time where you really helped a client, time you really helped a friend, and keep working on that list, because that's a way of having thoughts that you can replace the negative thoughts with. Okay, I'm having a hard time right now with this situation, but I had a similar situation a year ago, and it was fabulous, you know? So
okay.
That's one.
Go ahead.
The other thing is, and I think this is really important, we live in a world where we are bombarded with negativity. just, you know, and I read the newspapers, I feel it's important to be informed. But if all the newspapers ever wrote were positive things, they wouldn't sell. You know, so there's a lot of negativity in the newspapers. So look for positive things. Look for, sometimes I'll just go out to the web and I'll go on YouTube and I'll look for inspirational videos. And I use some of them in my talks because it's amazing to watch people looking at an inspirational video and how they just move into this whole positive space. Positive images in your environment, in your office, will create a higher level of positivity. So it's not just one thing, it's doing a number of things. And remember, doing the gratitude journal, hugely, hugely effective. One of the founders of positive psychology, Marty Seligman, who runs the positive psychology department at the University of Pennsylvania, did a study on kids in college. And, you know, kids in college can get really depressed, and usually in their first couple of years. So he had a couple of kids in this program. And they were seriously depressed kids. They really couldn't even get out of bed. And all they had to do was write down three good things a day. And it would be as simple as, you know, the toast was great this morning. Or, you know, the coffee didn't, you know, but I loved the cream in the coffee. Anything to think positively. Okay. And these kids started to move into a more positive state to where they could get up and go to school. So I recommend reading anything by Marty Seligman.
Okay, I wrote that down, and I did have the equally true but different thought written down in a standout way on the page, too. I think I wasn't connecting with it because I was thinking more about negative thoughts that don't serve, and I don't really view those as being true, so they're not thoughts that I want to reinforce. So I guess that's why I'm struggling with that one.
So give me an example. Let's try something.
Okay, let me choose one. I don't mind sharing.
Or you can think about it and raise your hand again if you'd like.
Okay.
So let me just talk about that for one more minute. So when we use an equally true but different thought, the negative thought has to be replaced with a positive thought. That's the bottom line.
Replaced with a positive thought. Okay.
Absolutely, because you will not have a positive feeling if you replace it with a negative thought.
Okay.
Does that help?
It does, but I guess it's the equally true part. Why? What is the strength of the statement being equally true?
Well, I think it has to. Negative thoughts can be very powerful. Right? And if you just, you know, say platitudes like, oh, I'm a good person, everything will be all right, very often that's not going to get you where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking for, again, we're talking about business here. So very often we're having trouble with a client or a proposal wasn't picked up or something. So when we are feeling down about that, we have to replace that thought with some area of our business life that's been successful.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. This was awesome today.
Thank you so much. Well, I've got another caller. Okay, Jolene.
Actually, it is me again. I ended up with the question listening to the last caller. One of the things that you said is that we are not two people, and I would think that almost every person in the world would have to stop and go, are you sure? So one of the things that made me think of is because of society or parents, we have this internal judgment on how we should behave and how we should think. And it's, you know, be a good girl, think positive thoughts, do good things. But there is also a dark side to our personality. And sometimes that dark side is being a little ornery, being a little teasing. And what suggestion would you give to allow us to feel comfortable and non-judgmental about that little more dark side that sometimes can fill us up?
That's a great question. So, and to be clear, you're saying when the dark side is the side of our own personal side where we may be judgmental. Let's use that as an example of someone else.
Well, I was actually thinking that we hide that dark side because of criticism or judgments that we've received as we've grown up. In other words,
right.
You know, like my brother used to say to me, well, Jolene's getting kind of out of control and giddy. We better go home, you know, and it's like, you know, hold back that, you know, that I'm getting a little crazy, wild and crazy girl here, right?
Yeah.
But you know what? You got to let that side out. You can't always be perfect and good and nice and sweet and gentle.
Absolutely.
So the judgmental part, and truly, yes, there is a dark side of us that's judgmental, but I'm really talking more about how to fully show up in all that you are, which
that,
is sometimes that armory person, right?
Yep, absolutely. You know, I talked about studying positive psychology, and the professor was Tal Ben-Shahar, and he's really just one of the best instructors of positive psychology that there is on the planet today. And I loved his term. His term was permission to be human.
Mm.
This is not about perfection. In fact, it's about the opposite, because if we try to be perfection, if we try to be perfectionists, or if we are perfectionists or try to create perfection, we actually end up putting ourselves, we increase the negative thoughts in our own head. You know, why didn't I do that better? Blah, 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 blah. You know, and it is this constant running dialogue in our minds about all the things that we're not doing well. So I believe that it is extremely important to accept ourselves fully for who we are. I'm like that too. I was one of those kids that could be like completely exuberant, right? Just right off the top. And you know, my mother was, now calm down, Ruth. And I'm like, I don't want to calm down. I want to be exuberant, you know? And you know, you and I both worked for one of the biggest companies on the planet. Exuberance, you know, it was a little bit out of control. So one did not do that sort of thing, right? We learned to be very controlled. So I think that it's very important. I know that it's very important to accept ourselves for who we are, and then also know that there are certain circumstances in which some of our behavior is just, you know, it's better to show it in some places than not. You know, but if we're always saying that's bad behavior and there's no place I can show it, that's a recipe for a lot of personal pain. And the pain comes from the fact that we're just beating ourselves up all the time with negative thoughts. So this whole idea around negative thinking, Jolene, and for everyone on the call, is so important, because there's all kinds of research going on in the brain today. It's like this new frontier of science, and I'm so fascinated by it. Some studies show that we think somewhere in the range of 60,000 thoughts a day, huge number, and 80% of them for most of us are negative. Why did I choose that dress? Why didn't I do better in class? Why didn't the client call me back? You know, why did my husband say this? Why did my boyfriend do that? Why did my girlfriend do that? On and on and on and on and on. It's just this running thing in our heads. And here's the kicker. 90% of the thoughts that you thought yesterday, you're going to be thinking today, unless you start to learn to inquire, what am I thinking? How's that working for me? Is there an equally true but different thought? What am I doing to create, am I in a situation where I'm able to experience engagement? Am I in a situation where I'm allowing myself to express who I am, at least in a good part of the time? Do I have healthy relationships? You know, am I just focusing on the negative by, you know, reading only negative blogs or negative newspapers? All of these things, as we start to shift, we can start to shift this dynamic of having all these negative running thoughts in our brains to having more positive thoughts. But the thing is, it's it takes some discipline and some training, and certainly understanding these concepts. Is that helpful?
Very helpful. Thank you. I love that thing that's almost a mantra. It says being perfect is what word did you use?
Oh my.
Being perfect is almost bad.
it is actually. Yes, perfectionism. I'll give you an example. I have a young person in my family. He's in his mid-30s. He's got two beautiful young boys, 8 and 10. And he was going through a period, my 30-year-old relative, where he was being a little tough on his 10-year-old. And I said, "What? You know, I know he loves these boys like crazy." And he said, "I just want him to be perfect." And I said, "You and I need to have a conversation." Because he already is perfect. And the more you focus on what he's doing wrong, the more he's going to focus on what he's doing wrong. And inside the message he's getting is, there's something wrong with me. I have to be perfect. And for anybody that, pardon me, pollen here in the Northeast, anybody who has an issue around perfectionism or knows someone, I would refer you to Tal Ben-Shahar's book on perfectionism, as he himself struggles with it.
Thank you, Ruth.
You're welcome, Jolene. Any other questions? I'm having a blast with this conversation. I hope you all are. It's fun to talk about some of the things that we talk about in the other calls. but again, I think from the perspective of managing our own minds in our businesses and in our lives and helping all those people that we come in contact with, the young people in our lives and the relationships we have, the more we understand these concepts, the better life will be. So it's kind of a pay it forward thing. I don't see any more hands up. So I want to thank you all for being on the call. It's just been an honor and a pleasure, and I wish you all a wonderful day. Let anybody you know, these are open calls, and just to forward them on, and I will talk to you next week. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.